Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we work to record the oral histories of current and former DOC employees. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, August 27th, 2019, is Dave Rudon. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's nice to be here, Susan.
Before we get started, can you please tell us about your employment history with the DOC, the facilities you worked at, and the titles that you held?
I started in 1984. I started as a correctional officer trainee after coming from 4 years at Northumberland County Prison. Went to the academy and started as a correctional officer trainee at Camp Hill. Just prior to the riot, I was accepted at the Department of Corrections Training Academy, which at that time was down on Nutley Drive, for skill sets that I had that were needed at the department at that time. I was promoted to sergeant. After we moved the academy to Elizabethtown, they opened SCI Cole Township, and in 1993, I left the academy, took my commission, and went to SCI Cole, where I was lieutenant and opened the RHU there.
Okay, thank you. Now let's talk about the riot.
All right.
So talk to me about what your day was like on October 25th, 1989.
Well, I'll give you a little preview before that. On the 23rd, my wife told me that we were going to have a child. And on the 25th, I was in the captain's office as the building was burning down around me and thought, I'm never going to find out whether it was a boy or a girl.
Where was the captain's office at the time?
It was over in Group 1. Straight down the main walkway, and then on your right, and then you had a couple of cell blocks behind there, and the Group 1 dining hall.
What were you doing over there at the time?
We were trying to get records, and had a list of things that we were trying to get out of there. When we went in, everything was fine. Once we got in.
So around 3 o'clock on October 25th, that's about when the riot started.
Yes.
And you were in there?
No, I didn't get there until, I think it was about 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Okay. It was about 3 hours into the rioting?
Correct.
Okay, and you went into the captain's office?
Yes.
Okay. And so you were trying to rescue records?
Yes.
So back to that evening on October 25th. What do you remember seeing?
Chaos, fire, smoke, places where I had lunch every day, just burning.
So I don't know why, but I thought that most of the stuff on the first night happened in Group 2 and 3 area.
Yes.
Is that where you ate your lunch every day?
Well, see, I was assigned F block over there.
F block is where Tad Bickle was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we were woefully ill-prepared for a riot of that magnitude. I mean, I remember walking around with a bomb disposal vest on. It was like 3 days until I got home, until I got out of there. So I'm trying to remember all the things in chronological order. I spent the last 30 years trying to forget all that.
Right.
Now I'm trying to bring it back.
A couple hours into the riot, you are over in the captain's office area taking records out. Why are you taking records out of there?
Because I was ordered to.
Was the place on fire?
Not to the degree it was when I left.
Okay, but they knew they they, I guess the administration, knew that they had to get records out of there. Okay, so then you accomplished what you were sent in to do?
Yes.
And then where did you go?
I'm trying to think. After that, we were outfitted with whatever they had laying around as far as what they called emergency equipment at the time.
And I'm hearing that that really wasn't very sophisticated equipment or even really enough.
No, it was. I mean, I remember the second night we were in Echelon, and like one guy would have a shotgun, one guy would have a bomb disposal vest, one guy would have a helmet. One guy would have a baton.
Oh, so you had to spread it out.
Yeah, and then the other guy would have the ammunition for the gun. It was like
everybody had a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So what was going on at E-Gate at this time, the first night? Because E-Gate really was like the central kicking off point.
That's where everything happened with... with Sarge. That's where the whole thing started. And it just blew up from there.
So as you're walking on that roadway between E Block and the education building, how was the reception for you from the inmates? What kind of reception were you getting? How were you being greeted?
With things going through the air.
Rocks, bricks?
Rocks, whatever they could get their hands on. I remember the second night when they got into the construction cluster, they were up on the roofs of the housing units, and you know, we were standing there in an Echelon line when I heard something whizzing through the air, and it was a circular saw blade.
Oh my.
Yeah, that I got hit with in the leg and didn't realize. I have no feeling from the knee down on this leg.
Because of that?
No. Before that. And I remember trying to get the jumpsuit off. We had jumpsuits, and it was burned, and it smelled really bad. And I was trying to get it off, and it was stuck to me. And I couldn't figure out why it was stuck, and the blood had... I didn't even realize that I was hit.
Oh, my. So all of the tools that nowadays would never be allowed inside the institution were inside the institution. Where were they held inside the institution before the inmates got to them?
In the construction cluster, which was back behind like the chapel, and they had acetylene torches and chainsaws, everything that was in there, everything, drills, but using the circular saw blades like frisbees was what really...
And were you standing on the one side of the fence with everybody else, just kind of watching what was the inmates were doing on the other side, but just kind of trying to reinforce that line so that they weren't coming through that?
Correct.
And that went on for hours?
Yes, and
hours.
Hours and hours.
And when did it finally come to an end for that night, and how?
I don't remember the mechanics behind what ended it the first night. What I do remember from the first night was the superintendent saying, oh, we're secure, everything is good. And all of the locking mechanisms on the Van Dorn system were broken. And at that time, realized that our locksmiths were inmates. Mm. So we sent everybody home. And then they said, no, if you just reach your hand up over a little bit, yep, right there, push up. And then the cells just all came open. And it was... unlike Christmas lights.
So you went home the first night?
No.
Okay. So it ended about 11:30-ish the first
yes.
night. And you just rolled right into the next shift?
Yeah. It just went on.
And then the inmates were locked down. I'm using air quotes.
Right.
And so they were trying to feed the inmates, providing them with medical care after they stuffed them into all the different cells,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And then at some point the inmates were supposed to meet with the superintendent on the 26th.
Yes.
And I think they had that meeting, but then something made them mad. And then they took over the prison again after that. Was it something the superintendent said during one of the briefings that they happened to watch on TV? Or what was it that made them start up again?
I'm not really sure. While that was going on, I'm trying to think of where I was. But we were busy when they were doing that. I remember much more of the second night than I do the first night, because the second night was...
Okay, so where were you on the second night?
I remember... I'm trying to get my thoughts together. I remember the first night. I remember Ron Clark, who was on G Block. He was taken hostage. And you realize when you're doing this job that this is part of it, you know, that this is
possibly something that could happen.
Right. And you prepare for it, but you never expect it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I always wondered to myself, how would I react to this? And I remember when I first came on as a trainee, a sergeant saying, oh, you know, you want to watch who you hang with, because, like, that guy over there, if things break bad, he's going to leave you. And, you know, he was pointing out who I should be with. And when the shit hit the fan, all the people he told me were going to run stuck by me, and all the people he told me were going to be ran like...
roaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember the next morning at daylight, they were trying to feed us. The first night was kind of... you were so tired, you didn't remember anything. You were just moving. You were just... But I remember seeing Ron Clark coming across the walk from group one and two, or from group one to group two and three, with the cigar in his mouth. And I looked at him. And this guy was taken hostage. They took his ring. They took pictures of his wife and his children. They got his wallet. And they held him for hours, you know, threatening his life. And there it was the next morning. And here came Ron walking across. He said, what are you doing here? He said, going to work. Like, it was...
Wow.
Yeah. That's something that I won't ever forget. So we... And then because of what I was doing at the academy, we did not have sufficient weapons to secure the perimeter. And I'm not sure whether it was the Maryland State Police or Maryland Department of Corrections that sent us a ton of guns to secure our perimeter with. And
in addition to all the local police and state police that
yeah.
showed up. Wow.
It was... I remember... And I'm trying to think of his name. These are all things that I blocked out. Major of State Police. We were standing
Hazen.
In it. Exactly. We were standing in echelon and had really nothing to fight back with. And the inmates were on the roofs, and they'd broken into... the group 2 and 3 kitchen, and they were throwing like number 10 cans, full number 10 cans at us. Yeah, they hurt. And Major Hazen was like right behind me, and I said, Major, can you tell me why we're standing here like targets? And I remember Hazen getting on the radio, and there were, you know, three helicopters flying over the jail, and he says, get them off the roof. And the next thing, out of nowhere, this helicopter came, and I just saw inmates diving off the roofs, and I thanked him profusely, because that sort of stopped the siege on the echelon.
Wow.
Where we were getting beat up.
It was in the reports that Freeman never went inside that institution, and we know that there were communications problems between the two deputies. They didn't necessarily get along, and, you know.
And one of the problems was, you know, here we are, we've got 10 news crews, and they're saying, oh, you know, we're going to do this, and we're And it's like, the inmates all have televisions. Mm-hmm. The inmates are all watching this. You're giving away the gameplay. You say, oh, well, they're going to be over here. Guess where the inmates are going to be? They're going to be over here,
they
too.
They actually showed a map of how the state police were going to try to enter the institution, yeah. And our press secretary was calling them, screaming on the phone, stop showing that map.
Yeah. And the other thing, we had two separate entities that were trying to run the show. We had our people who didn't have a clue what was going on, and we had state police that had half a clue what was going on. Me and Bill Ward, did you talk to Bill Ward?
No. I better get his name down. Yeah.
We were tasked with, we didn't have a count. This was, I'm trying to think, was this Thursday or Friday? We still didn't have a count. And Bill Ward and I were tasked with clearing the steam tunnels from Group 2 to Group 1.
Uh-huh.
And we went in at the kitchen. And the kitchen is burnt. It's cinders. And you go down a set of steps and there's landing. You go down another set of steps and then you're down in the steam tunnels. So, walking down the steps and I get to the first landing and I hear something down below. I hear a crunch. I hear like a foot turning on some broken. And my heart started pounding. Now I can't hear anything but my pulse in my ears. And I turned around and I looked at Bill and I could tell by the look in his eyes that he heard it too. And we're both armed. And I take another step down. I got one step in the landing and one on the step. And I hear somebody moving there. And I came around the corner and I brought my weapon up and there's a guy standing there. And as I brought my weapon up, his weapon came up. State police were coming through this way. We're going through this way. And neither one of us knew.
Oh my gosh.
And we both went. The only saving grace that I didn't feel like a fool was me and that statey had the same look on her face. He got on his radio and expletives deleted. Somebody better get the show coordinated.
Wow. You could have both taken each other out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two casualties and it was two cops shooting each other.
Yeah. Tom Rogoski talked about the fact that, I think it was Tom, but there were rumors that count was off by an inmate and they thought the inmate was running through the tunnels. And so I guess after they were cleared, so you must have been part of that process, they had the fire department bring in 55-gallon drums of water that they put on top of the manholes in case somebody was in there, that they'd be trapped. But, you know, everybody I talked to says they accounted for everybody. Nobody died. Yeah, people were shot. Some of the inmates got shot.
God, there's so much stuff coming back. And some of it's funny and some of it's so horrible. Owens tasked us with when we had control of the jail. You know, it's getting late in the season. It's getting cold out at night. He wants these inmates back in cells as quick as possible. And he doesn't want any of their property destroyed. And we're looking, it looked like Hiroshima after the bomb. And we had a limited amount of time to get these people in before the weather broke really bad. And I remember calling Kenny Mumon and said, send me a torch, a bobcat, and a 10-wheeler up to K Block. And we cut the center post out. And I had officers, as a matter of fact, I had cadets from the academy. I said, everything in those cells, just toss it over right on the floor. And then we had them come in with bobcats loaded up. And
well, that's the way you had to clean it up because everything was a mess.
You know,
there's no accounting who had what.
Right. And the thing is, you know, then you had, not only did you have inmates against staff, but you also had inmates against inmates. You always have that in the right. So, I mean, they were in other people's cells throwing stuff, and it's like, I can't go through and say, oh, this is AK-2637, and
take the post out, go in with the Bobcat, you guys throw everything off of there. And Mike Lighty was with me. He says, "You realize we're gonna get fired for this?" I said, "Yeah." I remember driving with the perimeter vehicle to go around and make sure that I was passing shotguns out, and seeing all of these inmates kneeling at the fence, I mean the whole perimeter, with signs around their neck, AK-2635, not involved. Mm. You know, because when people see a riot, they think those inmates. And not realizing there's a handful of inmates that did this. There's not 2,000 inmates involved in this. There's 300 inmates involved in this. But they're and then now you've got, you know, 500 because it looks like you're winning, so we're going to join in. But the majority of them wanted no parts of this.
Yeah.
And, you
and
know,
they sat in the yards, right? Just
yeah,
sitting there.
They went out there. They had pieces of cardboard and whatever they could use as a marker.
Oh, my.
You know, and they were kneeling there with their hands behind their back, looking at the cops and saying, you know, I'm not involved. I'm going to take something to get to sleep tonight.
Oh, no.
I remember when they had the inmates got like the 4x8 sheets of paneling out of the construction cluster, and they were making barricades. And I remember the fire trucks like just blasting them and watching guys just go flying. Mm-hmm. I remember things that I heard afterwards, friends of mine that lived like in Millersburg saying that you could see the jail burning from across the river. I remember, I'd been up for like 72 hours, and me and JD hit there about the same time, and on the second day, and when we were finally leaving, he went out and he pulled in and jumped out of the car and forgot to turn his lights off. His battery was dead. I had to go over and jump his car so he could get home.
Wow.
I remember so many.
So people also talked about the fact that morale was really bad before. Do you remember that at
the,
all?
The what?
Employee morale was really bad.
We had found a number of glaring problems and had talked to our superiors who had gone and said, you know, we've got to fix these things. And it was, this is what really pissed us off, that they were looking at like $500,000 of renovations to fix things that were absolutely blatant in the riot. These were the things we were talking about. And they didn't have the money to do that, to fix it, but we had, you know, $200 million to redo everything after, you know, all my friends got hurt. You know, nobody died. But there's things worse than death. And I know people to this day that from the 25th until now lived in fear every day. So their life was over that night. Mm-hmm. They didn't die, but their life was over.
So how were you able to, at the time, get through it and go back in like you're supposed to? Or even after that, even continue working in corrections? I mean, it sounds like it really affected you. Why? What kept you going?
It affects me more now than it did then because, you know, I had just found out I was going to be a father, and I thought, there's no way I'm dying in this jail, and there's no way, whatever it took.
In some cases, people, they say they don't know how. They just did what they had to do.
Yeah. you know, you hear all of this stuff about, you know, people talking about heroes and fear, and it's, I knew what I was getting into. I mean, I was a correctional officer at the county before I came to the state. The county's worse because they're all jitterbugs. You don't know anything about it. By the time we get them, you know who their grade school teacher was. And so, you know, I've been in a lot of situations, and we were woefully understaffed at the county. And there, I had a lot of faith in the people that I worked with. And I knew that together, and I knew there has never been, and this is what I used to tell people, there has never been a riot where the inmates won, ever, in the history of corrections. We will always win. And I knew that I was going to make it out, no matter what it took. You don't get scared until after.
When you realize what you've been through.
Yeah. Because
the fact that the cells were not secured that first night, end of the first night.
And we knew that, and we tried to tell them that. And it's like we were more concerned about our public image than our officers. We've got everything under control. No, you don't have everything under control. You don't have anything under control. The jail is secured.
But the inmates were running around on the tiers. The officers could see them.
Well,
and then, of course, they broke out again.
You know, and then we're running around with chains and padlocks trying to, you know, close the doors.
It's maddening, isn't it? I can feel it.
So I loved my job. And if it wasn't for my health, I'd still be there.
So looking back, you would do it all again?
Oh, absolutely.